Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf, Vav Basra Mem Tes. We're holding on the fourth line off the top. Gufa, let's go back and review the halacha that we learned yesterday. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman tells us, let's say we have a loan document, a shtar choiv, that Reuven borrowed $1 million from Shimon. And we have Edom signed on that shtar. But the Edom come along and tell us an interesting story. Amana hayu dvareinu. Amana comes from the word emuna, trust. What happened was, we were asked to sign this document ahead of time, in advance of the actual issuance of the loan. So the borrower trusted the lender that he's not going to capitalize on the shtar unless he actually issues him a loan. So we cooperated, we went along with it, we did him that favor, we signed him the shtar, even though there was no loan yet issued. Amana hayu dvareinu. So you should know, the document is not forged. It's legitimate, but it was never actually actualized. It wasn't activated. Amana hayu dvareinu. Ein amana, we can't believe them because they're undoing their written and signed testimony. The halacha is kivan shehigit. Once an aid offers testimony, ein chayzer umagid. You can't go back on that. You can't retract his statement. The shtar indicates that there was a loan. You can't go back on that. Can't try to undo that. Amana hayu dvareinu, ein amana. Another example, likewise, meida hayu dvareinu. It's a sale, a purchase document, indicating that Reuven sold this house to Shimon. The Edom are signed on it, and they're conceding that it's a legitimate document, unforged, right? Real, authentic signatures. But, Moida Hayu Dvareinu, you should know that a day before, the seller indicated to us that he was being forced to do this sale. He was issuing a disclaimer in our presence. So basically what they're trying to do is undo the effect of the sale document. Ein Ne'eman, and once again, we can't believe. That's Rav Nachman's opinion. He considers this to be a sort of a retraction of the written word. So no trust there. No ne'emanus. Umar bar Rav Ashi, Omar, he disagrees slightly. He says, look, theoretically, conceptually, it's not considered a retraction. You're not really going back on your word. You're just adding another element, another important factor to know. It's like, Rashbam says, it's like a condition. Right? You're agreeing that the shtar is kosher, but you're saying, look, there was something added to it. There's some other element that you must know of, that you should be apprised of. It's just an aman. It's after a moedah. So it's not considered a retraction. I'm going back and what I'm just adding another layer of information, which, you know, by default puts limitations and restrictions on the written document. So in terms of chayzer or magid, there's no issue. However, says Mabra Ravashi, let's split the two cases. Let's differentiate. Mabra Ravashi, Omar, amana hayu dvareinu, ein amanan. If they should come back and say this was just a matter of trust between the lender and the borrower, it was never really carried out, the loan was never issued, they're not believed. But meida hayu dvareinu. But if they shall say that, this was issued after a disclaimer the day before, in this case, ne'eman and they believed. Now, what's the difference between the two? My taima, shezeh nitan likasev. A meidah is a perfectly legitimate procedure. Nitan likasev, it's meant to be done, meaning if the Edom were made aware of this compelling situation, of this fellow being blackmailed into selling, of course, they're meant to cooperate with him and hear him out and be there when he disclaims and follow through on the shtar and just cooperate so that they can come back and help him. So that's a fine arrangement. It's perfectly legitimate. So we believe them on that. Vezeh, but amana, lo nitan likasev, it's not a proper procedure. Rashbam brings a pasuk, al tishkan, boyalecha avlo, a pasuk in Iyov. You're not meant to have a shtar, a loan document written ahead of time. You know, the lender might actually use it and might actually collect from lekuchos. He might cash in on his lien, which is really predated to the actual loan. So it's not, you're not meant to do this. It's not a proper thing. It's not an honest, an erlicha type of thing to do. So basically what the Edom are doing, they're incriminating themselves. Rashbam says they're making themselves Rasha by indicating that they cooperated in this with this process, with this procedure. So a person cannot turn himself into a Rasha. A person is not Neman. I can't say I did something wrong, because basically he's testifying against himself. You can't do that. So by default, when the Edom say this was really an amana, they're incriminating themselves, which they have no neimanus to do, and we can't accept it as fact. Okay, so if Edom signed on a document and they claim amana or moida, Rav Nachman says in both cases no, it's considered a retraction. Mar Bar Avashi says it's not a retraction, but in the case of the amana, it's self-incrimination, which we don't accept. The Mishnah continues, you should know, should a husband claim ownership on his wife's possessions, it doesn't work. Well, pshita, obviously, given the islay lepeira, peira huduka achal, well, obviously, he can't claim ownership because it's part and parcel of their marital arrangement that a husband is entitled to reap the crop, the peiros, off his wife's properties. Let's say she has properties that are called nichsei malug, right, that she brings into the marriage, that she owns, he gets to eat the peiros, and it's part of the arrangement that the chachamim arranged for them, that he, in exchange for eating her peiros, he provides her with a guarantee, an assurance that if she's taken captive, he'll come and redeem her, irrespective of the cost, he'll ransom her. So peiros are tachas per koina, pay and pay, so easy to remember. So he's entitled to the peiros in exchange for his per koina, in exchange for committing to redeem her if necessary. So we all know the reason for his peiros, unrelated to ownership, it's hers, but he's eating the peiros because of the chachamim's takana. So how could he claim ownership? Well, Tzricha, the answer is like this. We are speaking the cause of law that the husband had forfeited the rights to the peiros. The kasavla, he wrote her as follows. Dinu dvarim, ein li b'nechasayich. Dinu dvarim is an expression like, I will have nothing to do with your properties. So since he's sort of relinquishing his rights, I have nothing to do with those properties, he shouldn't be taking the peiros. And if he is, and he's there a year, and another, he can claim ownership, he can claim chazok. Asks the Gemara, but just writing it in this manner doesn't really affect a full relinquishment of rights. He has to give it away, he has to grant it. He can't just say, I'm backing off, I'm detaching myself. Once he has it, he has to give it away for it to be really be considered granted, right? V'chikosavla, just because he wrote it this type of language, mayhavi, it's ineffective. V'atanya, we learned in a braisa, in the case of a partnership. Ha'imel chaver, Reuben tells us, his partner Shimon, with whom he had this joint ownership of the of this property, dinu dvarim ein li al sadazu, I have nothing to do with this field. Ve'en li esek bo. V'yodai mesulokai seimet mimena. Different, you know, various expressions of disengagement. Does that work? Does the property now revert fully to his partner's possession? No, lo'yemar klum. It doesn't have any legal effect unless he actually gives it away as a matana. So the husband as well, just because he says dinu dvarim doesn't change the equation. Amrilad v'Rabbianai, so in the Beis Medrash of Rabbianai, they explain that, in fact, in our Mishnah, Masnisen b'koisiv l'avoid al-Rusa, he committed to her in this way before he actually had it. You know, when you have it already, you have to, in order to get rid of it, you have to give it away. But here, he was not yet married. V'oid al-Rusa, she was at this point still engaged to him, not yet married. So the peiros, the access to the peiros only happens once he marries. So he can preempt the acceptance of the peiros by saying, look, I want nothing to do with it. When you have it, when it's already yours, you have to give it away. But if it's not yet yours, you can sort of put a block on it. right? When the time comes, I don't want it. I don't want it coming into my possession. So this is an effective disengagement. Ukdar Rav Kahana, as Rav Kahana tells us elsewhere, in a similar halacha, you can't force a person to accept something that was meant for his benefit. I mean, you just can't, right? Specifically, if it's a takanos chachamim, you know, that they did for his, you know, benefit. Ukdar Rav Kahana, Dam Rav Kahana, nachla, an inheritance. We're not speaking about a Yerusha min HaTorah, you can't block that from coming. But a Yerusha min HaRabbanan, like a Yerusha of his wife, or in the case of the Peirois, this type of, these types of financial rights can be blocked ahead of time. Nachla habala l'adam makam achar, if a person's getting a nachla from elsewhere, adam masna aleo shlo yiroshen, a person can precondition ahead of time, I don't want it. Ukadirava. As Rava tells us regarding a similar halacha, that a person can refuse, he can turn down a financial arrangement that the Chachamim applied for his benefit. In this case, we're speaking about an Isha. The Amar Rava, Kolo Imari Efshi, Takanas Chachamim, Kigainzu. If a person says, look, I'm uninterested in the Takanas Chachamim that was meant for my benefit, Kigainzu is, for instance, like this case, we'll see in a minute, Shomiloi. Yeah, okay, we accept it. Mikey going Zois, what was Rava speaking about when he referenced, you know, specifically this? What is that? We all know that the Isha gets Mezoines, right? The Chachamim were Mesakin for her sake, that even though sometimes an Isha can earn some money and she has, you know, talents to earn income, but perhaps it won't suffice for her needs. The Chachamim said, look, the husband is responsible. He has to support her regardless of whether she earns or not. And in sort of an exchange, as a package deal, he gets her Masi Yadayim. Whatever she earns goes to him. Now, let's say we have a very high-earning woman, very successful woman. She's not interested in his peanut butter sandwiches, right? It doesn't match up to her income. So she might say, look, keep your sandwiches and I'll keep my income. She can do that because ultimately it was done for her sake, for her benefit. And that was Rav Huna's halacha. Could Rav Huna marav? Damar Huna marav, yicholo isha shetami lebaile, a married woman could turn to her husband and say, look, eini nezoines, I am turning down your support, your mezoines, your food, ve'eini oisa, and I'm no longer going to supply you with my income. Okay, fair deal, you keep your food, I'll keep my money. Okay, so likewise in our story, with our Mishnah, regarding the ish, being machzik b'nichse ishtoi, the question was, how could we even consider him as a chazaka? We all know that he's taking the pirus via his rights granted to him by the chachamim, that he gets the pirus in exchange for offering to redeem her when necessary. The answer was, he turned it down ahead of time. He gave up his rights to pirus. So he shouldn't be taking her pirus. And if he is, doing it year after year, apparently, it should denote ownership. Right? Nevertheless, says the Mishnah, you should know it doesn't work. It's not a chasaka, because after all, you know, a wife isn't necessarily going to stand in her husband's way when he picks up, you know, picks her bananas, right? So even though she didn't really sell it to him, but she'll just let him do what he needs to do. Okay, interestingly, the Rashbam learns that when a husband forfeits the peiros, so since the peiros were there as a package deal, he gets peiros, she gets perkoina, right, the redemption process, he is now absolved from that perkoina. Tosis disagrees, he says Chacham would never allow that for concern that she might end up, you know, getting entrapped by the goyim with nobody to redeem her. So even if he gives up the peiros, he's still obligated to redeem her if necessary. Interesting side point. So the Mishnah clearly tells us that a husband's three-year chazaka on his wife's assets don't indicate ownership. But let's say, raya, yesh, but let's say he had a raya. He has edim, or he has a shtar that he purchased her property. That's effective. That indicates ownership. Really, why? Raya, yesh, tema, she can always claim, well, look, I was trying to just be a good wife. I cooperated with him, but I didn't really sell it to him. Nachas ruach, I never really wanted to sell it to him, but look, you know, I figured, you know, past of least, path of least resistance. Let me just cooperate with him. So it's not really a valid deal. As we find in a different halacha as well, Milay Tanan, haven't we learned in a Mishnah in a similar case? Suppose a husband who typically is really bound to his wife's ksuba payment, right? So anything that he owns, all his assets are really bound to that. So let's say he divorces her or he dies, she can collect from any one of his assets. Now, let's say he sold one of his properties. And the buyer certainly can use it now during his lifetime, but let's say he'll pass away and she'll be owed her ksuba, she can turn around and collect from this property. So the buyer, a smart fellow, he says, look, I want to sort of get her out of the way. I want to buy her off. Buy out her rights to this asset. This way, even if it comes time to pay the ksuba, she won't harass me. So lokach mene'ish. So this buyer first went and purchased the property from the husband. And then, as a sort of an insurance policy, he went over to the isha and gave her a token amount. I want to get you off the case. V'chazav alokach mene'ish, went back to the isha. He says, look, your husband sold me the property, but I know after all, you still have your rights, you still have your claims on this property. I want to sort of buy you off. So he did that. Mikhay batla, it doesn't work. And if in fact she gets to the point that she'll collect her ksuba, she can collect from this asset. You know why? Even though it appears like she sold off her rights, Alma, apparently, Amra, she can claim, Nachas Ruach, Asisi Lubali. I was just trying to satisfy my husband. It wasn't really something I wanted to do. I was forced into doing this. Hachanami, so here as well, now Mishnah. Certainly when it's between him and her, and he's sort of getting her to sell him her properties, Tema, she can just say, Nachas Ruach, Asisi Lubali. I was just compelled, I felt forced. I was just trying to be nice to him, try to satisfy him. It wasn't really a legitimate Ha'itmar Allah, the answer is like this. Haven't we learned an explanation on that halacha with the customer, with the lakeach from the ish and the isha? It doesn't really pertain to all his assets. Amar Rabba Barav, who knows, le'nitzrucha, it only applies ela bo'esam gimel sadeis, on very specific properties, three different types of properties, which are pretty much bound, are specifically bound to her ksuba payment. And in that case, she's totally relying on these properties and therefore she didn't really mean to sell it off. And therefore she retains her rights on those fields. What are these three categories? Achas, one would be shekasal v'ksuvasa, a specific field that the husband specified in the ksuba document that if the day comes that you have to collect, you're going to collect from this field. So even though really all his assets are equally bound to her ksuba, but the fact is he singled it out. He identified it as a separate field bound to the ksuba. So she's sort of connected to that field, and certainly she expects to collect from it. V'achas, sheyichud lo b'ksuba. So another case can be when he specified verbally, after they married, he says, look, this is going to be designated for the ksuba. A third case would be a field that she brought in from her parents, and it was appraised and recorded in the ksuba, so that's certainly bound to the ksuba payment. So in these three situations, we apply this halacha, and we say the sale is null and void. But otherwise, other assets, if she cooperated with the buyer, and she went along with it, and she sold it to him, we say it's a proper sale. Says Gemara, really? Lemutimai, you're singling out these three examples as opposed to what? Ilema lemutei shar nechasim, as opposed to his other assets. That if she cooperated, we consider it a valid deal. If anything, quite the contrary. She's very much going to hesitate to stand in his way when it comes to other assets. When it comes to these assets, she has an alibi, she has an excuse. What are you selling these assets which you've specifically bound to my... So she has a right to sort of say, look, this is going a bit too far. But what business does she have? If anything, she's more intimidated when it comes to other assets, which were never really linked to the ksuba. Koshkin the Havile Eva, because certainly that can generate animosity between the couple if she stands in his way of selling those properties. The Amrla, because he can tell her, he can turn around to her and say, look, why are you thinking about divorce and like what's going on? You have your eyes on my death and our divorce. I mean, why are you expecting to get your ksuba? I mean, things are calm and serene and great, right? So if anything, she's even more hesitant to get in the way over there. Oh. The answer is like this. When we single out these three and we say, no, as opposed to others, we mean Nichsei Malok, which are her properties, totally her properties, right? Those are the properties that he can take the Paris, but the actual principle belongs to her. So he has no business, selling that. So, yeah, in this type of case, if he sold it to a stranger, and then the stranger comes and, you know, double buys it from the Isha, meaning he like sort of gives her pays her a token amount to sort of confirm and certify the sale, she can't claim that she was just doing it to satisfy the husband, because there's absolutely no basis, no justification for selling her property. She should not have cooperated. Okay? So back to our Mishnah. A husband has no chazaka in his wife's nechasim, but let's say he claims to have purchased it from her, and we're speaking about Nichsei Malug. Why would she have sold it to him? So if he brings a raya that he bought it, it's his. It's his. Okay, we'll pick it up tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, but as a short summary, we learned about the Edom going back on their written word. It's just Maida, it's just Amona. Rav Nachman says it doesn't work. Mavra Ravashi says Amona, well, that's self-incriminatory, it doesn't work, but Maida works. A husband has no Chazakim Nichsa Ishti, even though he ate Paris many years running. And we're speaking where, even if he gave up his rights to the Paris by saying, look, I'm not interested in doing this ahead of time, right? Before he got the rights to the Paris. So he really shouldn't be taking it. Still, even if he's on the field eating the Paris, perhaps the wife is just, you know, swallowing it, not getting in his way, but doesn't necessarily denote ownership. But if he has a right that he bought it, she wouldn't have gone that far. And of course, that is a raya to his ownership. All the best to you, and atzlocha rabba, b'suras tevas.